I had been director of marketing and sales at Sun River.
Right. So you're there when the tourism moved.
We had come back from Wisconsin and ended up moving and working there. And in the course of doing that, started to do some international work. And one thing led to another. But GPCBA was also a brand new organization.
Yeah.
Split off from Portland Chamber with the room tax funding plus members. And so when all that began, it became evident that the state travel effort was very behind the times.
Yeah.
And so that's why that paper, and I testified before the legislature on the movement from
highways into that.
Yeah. But things weren't, you know, from the outside looking in, you didn't really know what was going on with the rest of the agency.
Right.
You only knew that tourism was still in sort of a rebuilding mode. And that's why they wanted me to go run it, and I didn't.
Yeah.
Wasn't willing to do that.
Yeah.
But obviously, John was looking to try and build a team that he could rely on. I remember it was kind of this. I kind of got this back door information from a contact who said, "Oh, there's this guy down there who really is lobbying for that position of deputy." And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, he's an insider and has the track." I subsequently came to know the guy, and I thought, really?
Yeah.
So then it sort of started to make sense to me why John would even have any interest in me.
Right. Right.
But it was what it was.
Were you aware of the dynamics of Wayne County, where it came from? Because Stubbs Stewart is a real pain in the Watusi to everybody. Yeah. And so I was just wondering, when at the state level, was Stubbs Stewart still, I mean, pushing? He's clearly pushing Wayne County stuff, but.
It was never a big, I mean, I knew Stubb, not well, but I certainly met Stubb. It kind of did everybody in one way or another who was a player. Stubb was definitely a player, but what he was pushing wasn't necessarily that clear to me or that easily dealt with. The issue in Lane County, of course, you had, like everything else that began the transition about that time, I think I told you, the worst days of my job were the days that I got phone calls from companies like Champion International closing mills.
Yeah.
And here, you know, Stubb came out of that industry. So while there was still timber harvest and productivity, it wasn't clear to me what they really wanted. The U of O was the only sort of potential economic engine in the area, and the U of O was really not terribly engaged. They did develop during our time there a sort of incubator concept, and you know, it took the form, like they oftentimes do, of a building, a place with low cost, small space available for entrepreneurial people, and the idea was to find a way to transfer knowledge and technology from the academic into the economic environment. But that was very, very early and premature, and I don't know that Stubb had anything to do with it from my recollection.
Yeah.
But he was a name and a player, and beyond that, it was the U of O that we kind of dealt with.
Fascinating, on the first visits to Korea that the governor takes, and other people, governors had been to Korea, but U of O actually worked with Korea in 1958.
Really?
On a small program. And being involved in academia, I know that this probably means there were a faculty member who said this is a project, but there's no follow through, there's no nothing.
Because it didn't have a home.
Yeah, it doesn't have a home, it doesn't have a little bureaucracy, it doesn't have funding that really lasts. So,
well, it's interesting where and how the universities did or didn't, from our perspective, play in some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
When we became involved in, it became opportunistic recruiting, I'll call it. Sharp RCA was one, a big one. We always went to Vern Duncan from an educational standpoint and or the universities and tried to see who could really bring the right message and be the right faceplate for Oregon in this context.
Yeah.
And you always got the cooperation you needed. It wasn't obvious what opportunities we had where that could play out.
Right. Yeah, watching the career of Joe Ha at Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
And he ended up being for Joe Ha.
There is
but there were a lot of connections there, but it's very clear that that was his main
there were some odd things that happened that you never really had a good answer to. But when we were starting to deal with Fujian Province and the PRC, there were some young people who wanted to come here to go to school, and it was difficult to get released. And one person ended up actually being, the argument was, potentially assassinated.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the details, and of course they were sketchy and unproven.
I've got a story like that. There was on the fall 84, 80, yeah, fall 84 trip, your triumphal trip to the Kaidan Ren. Bill Campbell was one of the people on board.
Attorney.
And so he gets to know a guy named Alan Huang.
Yeah.
Who was actually in the Chinese interpreter side.
Okay.
And Alan is one of the people who comes here and goes to Portland State and
all
stuff.
Right. Okay.
And Alan decided to stay.
Yep.
And so Bill tells a story, and I've got to talk to Alan, that Hu Ping was saying, or demanding that Atiyah sent him home. And Atiyah had to explain, the governor doesn't get to do that here. It's a different system. But a real eye-opener for the governor as well. But you know, those kinds of things were just fascinating.
Well, they were. I mean, they were sort of always over here on the side, but you'd hear about this.
Yeah.
I don't know if you picked up on the story about how we ended up sort of crossing with the Yakuza.
No. But I can, given the places that the governor liked to wander after he was governor, I can imagine.
Well, but this was before,
and
this was actually during the course of our recruitment. The short story, without any facts or photos or information to back it up, is this. David Luchens informed me one day that we had a bit of a problem. There was so much activity around investments and companies from Japan wanting to build here. One of them, it was an agricultural-based company that wanted to build a plant, and miraculously in North Salem. All good, right?
Yeah.
But in the course of getting visas for the people they wanted to send overseas, the U.S. Embassy determined, with whatever collaborative effort they had from the Japanese, that at least one or more of these people had a criminal record and had ties to the Yakuza.
Right.
Conclusion was, yeah, sure, they want to establish a foothold and probably a means of money laundering or what have you.
Yeah.
So they were not allowed visas to join, enter the U.S., but they had plenty of other people they could throw at the problem.
Yeah.
So they did. And I was in Japan, and we arranged a meeting with the U.S. Embassy to discuss the problem. And what I recall from the meeting was that they basically said, you know, there's not too much we can do. If it isn't something that an individual has on their record, as these
Russians
were, then if they meet our requirements, they're able, they're allowed to immigrate.
Yeah.
So we sort of said, well, I think we've done our due diligence, but what else can you do if they meet the law?
Yeah.
They're here and in between.
Yeah. It's fantastic. There was a, so after Bush won, is now president.
Right.
Dan Quayle gave a real famous speech to the American Bar Association in Chicago, where he compared the number of lawyers in the United States to the number of lawyers in Japan.
Yep.
And I, who have studied a lot of Japan, said, but lawyers are people who help with human relations. The Yakuza do that. That's their job. Are they? Yeah. Danny, do you know what you're saying?
Prior to that, my only image of the Yakuza was the pachinko parlors.
Yeah, exactly. Pachinko parlors and a lot of tattoos.
Yeah, they were pretty well, that and the missing
exactly.
Yeah, it's sort of an obvious sign of of the brotherhood.
So question about the unitary tax.
Yes.
So this is from the draft of the unitary tax. So just read from John Anderson and down to about the 24th of July,
okay?
I think that's enough. Yeah. So he sends a memo to the governor on the 9th of July.
news to me.
And you know, going through all the documents, it just, the reason I asked her about it is this is the first document I've seen in the archives or in the Atiyah collection where all of a sudden the Department of Economic Development is weighing in any way on
issue.
And since things have been moving, you know, 6 weeks before, basically all the wheels were put in motion.
Sure.
So I was just wondering, do you remember, you told me briefly when we talked before, you got there and one of your first things was, let's get the unitary tax through.
But these things were in my recollection of it, because I went there in May of 84, and this was in process. I was engaged immediately in the issues with the companies that were already silently here on the way. But more importantly, the first thing that happened was the Kia Morita-led mission.
Right.
And when he came and that group were here, it was, to me, it was like almost as, there was never any doubt in my mind, I should say, that something was going to happen and there was a need for it to happen, because Morita-san was so crystal clear about, without making it a threat, he made it more of a promise.
Right.
And we were working quietly with, NEC had already come forward. They were known.
Mm-hmm.
But I was working concurrently with Fujitsu America and Fujitsu Microelectronics and Seiko Epson.
Mm-hmm.
And so those three were all quietly saying, we're ready, we're here, we're working. And we were shopping property and doing all these things with all of them. At the same time, immediately subsequent to the Akio Morita-led mission. So to me, it was all sort of in the process of something's going to happen. I wasn't involved in the politics of the situation at all. And my take on it would have been that from everything I knew, that the department would absolutely have been 100% behind
it. Yeah. So here's the... trying to figure out when the decision was made to have the special session. So this is kind of, here's one version and then another version of it right here. And it's exactly what you were just talking about.
May 29th. Fuji. These are all stuff I was doing. It's funny. If you were to ask me, based on my perception, it was tied very much to Morita-san.
To Morita-san.
He left no doubt.
Uh-huh.
And he's an extremely convincing and articulate, charismatic person. What I remember, just aside from being around him and getting to know him, so the quiet meetings, but we hosted a banquet at the Benson Hotel, and he gave a speech. And I don't know the words of the speech, but the message was quite clear that Oregon has the opportunity to be at the forefront of a great deal of investment.
Yeah.
If you do the right thing.
Yeah. And Atiyah really picks up on that. Once it's finally done, he said, you know, if we'd been second, third, or fourth, none of this would have happened. And it was being first.
It was magic. We were perfectly positioned in a lot of ways. Subtle ones, like the fact that Tektronix and Sony actually had an existing relationship that very few people knew about. That California was sort of already overburdened with cost and regulation. That Oregon had, more than any other state in the Northwest, a perceived abundance of clean, low-cost electrical power. Plenty of land if it became available, and it was actually, we had a sizable inventory of reasonable industrial property for these kinds of needs, and presumably a lot of people who could work if they could get trained to do so. Yeah. So it was an ideal situation, not to mention our simple visit location and a new airplane or two.
Yeah.
So it all sort of fit, but without that, and I think I told you I was asked that summer to go to, it was a summer sort of for tax advisors and experts hosted by, I think in those days, they were Ernst & Winnie, mm-hmm. Ernst & Young, mm-hmm. at George Washington University. Mm-hmm. And I went back and gave a lecture, sort of told the story.
Right.
Of what happened, why it happened, and how it happened, yeah. and what the benefits were.
Yeah.
Because other tax advisors in there, I think there were maybe a handful, maybe 13 states perhaps in the U.S. that had, at the time we repealed ours, had a unitary tax in place.
Yeah. There's actually, I have a little note, there's actually like 24, okay. but it depends on how you define it.
How you define the
So academics tax. Tend to say 22, 24, and reporters tend to say 12, 14. But it's
the number that I remember
yeah.
hearing without
yeah, exactly.
splitting hairs. You could look at something like 97 that was looked at recently and say, well, that's a sort of a version of a unitary tax.
Oh, yeah.
Anything on
yeah.
gross receipts.
Absolutely. And not the central part of this, but Atiyah, I think I told you, Atiyah carried that idea yeah. for Hatfield. He had proposed it just a year and a half before this.
Yes.
So he was thinking.
He was already there.
He was thinking that.
Yeah, he had to have been, but Merida, I think, was the linchpin, perhaps.
Yeah. Because until that decision was made, this was going to be part of the larger tax discussion
right.
for 85 that eventually didn't go anywhere and went to the sales tax, which failed.
Yeah, so, it would have been a different story.
Yeah.
100% different story.
Yeah. When he was inspired, he said, we have to separate it out from mm-hmm. that conversation
yep.
totally.
Yep.
Yeah.
It truly was perhaps the most important move I've seen made in politics and
yeah.
in my life in Oregon.
Yeah. And at the end, it'll take a little too long to bring it back up, but he says, Atiyah says, you know, that was politically the most satisfying
I believe it.
Process.
I believe it.
You know, identifying it, moving it, lobbying yeah. it, getting it through and seeing the results. Boom, 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 boom.
Well, there's very little in life that has such an immediate causal reaction.
No. And as Ted Kulongoski pointed out, most of the time when you're governor, you go do stuff. And then 10 years later, the business opens.
Exactly.
It's like, no, you saw the results.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, and you're so subject to larger trends, things that you have no control of.
Yeah.
Either
yeah.
you benefit or you don't.
Yeah.
That was real.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, it was all one big continuum of all
right.
of these activities. And
right.
it was hard to separate one from the other.
Now, when you were at Sun River, did you travel to Japan? Or were you just beginning to work with them and say, golf, come?
I don't believe I actually... It's a great question, and I should have a better answer, to be honest, because
mm-hmm.
I don't remember. I went through this transition point. I was starting to work with the people who were interested in promoting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if I was still at Sun River or if I was GPCBA when we made the first
okay.
trip. But the first trip, and I'd have to go back and try to search my personal memories and records, was with a group of people, including George Osamano.
Okay, so it's the Portland side.
And it was, yeah, Portland was the connection. I don't think the state, frankly, had anything.
Probably not.
I don't think Shirley Eads was doing anything
yeah.
on that issue at the time. So it was a small group of us who were sort of focused on that. And it was right at that junction point of my leaving Sun River to come to Portland.
So 81-ish.
So 81-ish,
yeah.
80, 81. And I could probably, actually I know I can find out. I'd go back to my old passport and probably find
yeah.
it for sure.
Yeah. No, it's not a germane, it's a germane to me, but...
I'll look it up.
It's just fascinating to me how quickly this all bubbled to the surface.
Yeah, well, as you see, 83 United Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of these things are so different than they are today. When I was there at GPCVA, what do you ever hear about Travel Portland today?
Yeah.
Do you know the name of the director?
No.
Do you know the name
no.
of anybody who's there? I don't
no.
either. Except for a reason, I actually do. But
well,
a good
yeah.
reason. I have photos upstairs in my, or no, they're in a book up there, I can show you to, or another box, of, we were featured in advertisements about new airlines opening in Portland.
Hmm.
Dave Heinle and Jack Bradley and I,
mm-hmm.
and Dave Heinle and another gal, Rita, whose husband, John, was the city manager for American Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And they featured us in large news articles. They featured us actually in an ad for Frontier Airlines.
Hmm.
And it's kind of like, it was such a different time and place. That would have been 1981.
Yeah.
And Portland was kind of coming out of this cocoon and kind of the dark ages.
But airlines are changing because deregulation is just getting started.
They were.
Yeah. So it's a different, they have an incentive as well.
Well, and even United Airlines, it was still this kind of little brother relationship, because I think if they had 6 or 7 flights a week, we only had one out of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
All the others were out of Seattle. Mm-hmm. It was like, well, thank you for giving us something.
Yeah, exactly.
But?
Airlines, which was partly founded in Medford, Oregon, should treat us better.
Really?
Yeah, because United Airlines is uniting all the airlines. Okay. But one of the key ones was a Medford airline.
Well, and then, of course, subsequent to that, Delta. But it was, all those things were just so, they were something. Mm-hmm. They were something you could hang on to. And it was the motivator for all of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It gave us a reason to meet and work for Fuji. I don't know if I ever told you about one of the more fascinating people I met, Japanese personalities, is a guy named Kei Ohashi, mm-hmm. Kiyosen Ohashi.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys, kind of, to simplify things for American markets, they sort of say, well, I'm the Johnny Carson of Japan. If they did an evening talk show thing.
Right.
Kei Ohashi was the true Johnny Carson mm-hmm. of Japan. And I met him when I was very new at GPCBA. There's a guy named Hartley. Interesting name, and I can't remember his full name right now. He was the head of the Seattle Convention Visitors Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Kay had become acquainted and friends. And Kay's story was, 5 nights a week, he did a evening talk show
mm-hmm.
on, I think he was on Fuji TV. But he was a very talented, smart guy, and he had a very different games, things he did different nights. Early in the week, it was political talk, and he would have on members of the Diet and other groups like that. But as it got later in the week, he'd get into entertainment, and he was famous for golf and fly fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And he personally claimed to have created the Japanese travel market into British Columbia by having done trips there to do the things he loved. And then he would go home and show himself doing this stuff mm-hmm. on these TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then the companies like Japan Travel Bureau, JTB, mm-hmm. and JAL, and all these groups would collaborate. And suddenly they're flying Japanese into Vancouver, and they're going to their favorite destination was like Banff, Lake Louise.
Yeah.
And he also met and owned a condo on Maui. And his neighbor was Swindells. Now, Bill was the CEO of Lymet Industries.
Right.
I've got to remember this, but this was his brother, the brother who probably never really worked much for him, who also owned a house at Salishan.
Mm-hmm.
He convinced Ohashi that he needed to come to Oregon and go to Salishan to play golf. So I became a party to this process. So Hartley Kruger was his name. So Hartley mm-hmm. brought Kay, and he had a beautiful young wife who was a famous actress,
mm-hmm.
to Oregon. And we met here, and we drove to Salishan and spent a night there. And the Swindells were there, and we went out and we played golf with Ohashi's son and Swindells and me. And I spent time with him, and I remember on the road down, he lectured about how silly the U.S. was for not adapting to the metric standard
mm-hmm.
like the rest of the world. He's probably right. He convinced me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing he did, and this is one of the things he was most famous for in Japan, was he was the Jimmy the Greek who set the odds on the Saturday horse races in Japan.
Oh,
and he was a horse race owner, or a horse owner, I believe.
Yeah.
So he is in the back of the kind of limo car, and his wife is performing as sort of his secretary, and he's literally sitting there on the drive down and running the odds for the race, and then when he gets to Salishan, she's going to call back and report this information that must go into the Asahi Shimbun or the papers. That was, I watched all this play out thinking, what a fascinating character this guy is. So the other thing he said he learned is the problem was when Japanese travel, they always take a lot of money. It's not their own money, it's the family money, and their job is to buy gifts and bring them home.
Right.
We entertained Saito-san's wife and her friend came here, mm-hmm. Sandy and I entertained them, and they took home thousands of dollars with mm-hmm. things like jewelry and mm-hmm. small high-value items. Well, he found that the problem for the Japanese market coming into British Columbia was that there was not enough for them to buy mm-hmm. that were attuned to their interests. So he created Keiohashi gift shops, OK gift mm-hmm. shops they're called. Mm-hmm. And he told me about these things, and I always had this image of kind of trinkety stuff. Mm-hmm. The next step in that process was on one of my trips to Japan, he said, well, I have to take you out for the evening, and we went out on the Ginza, he and mm-hmm. I and somebody else I was with there, and his sort of a guy who worked for him, who turned out to be actually an attorney, one of those mm-hmm. rare, but who was a facilitator, mm-hmm. and this guy sort of managed a lot of his business affairs and entertainment. And so we did dinner, and it was the first time I had shabu-shabu, the mm-hmm. steak. Mm-hmm. And I still remember sitting there and having the waiter or waitress come out and present the loin beef to me and say, is this acceptable? And I said, yeah, sure. Kobe beef, of course. Mm-hmm. And then they slice it paper thin, and they serve it to you. And I was hungry, and they said, would you like more? And I said, sure. And by the time I finished that night, at Tokyo prices, I probably ate who knows how many hundred yeah. dollars worth of beef yeah. without thinking about it.
Yeah.
But we're walking along, and his friend is telling me, he says, oh, you know, that's the way it is entertaining in the Ginza. He said, I spend over 10,000 U.S. a week just doing K's entertainment mm-hmm. here. And then, okay, I kind of get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So, fast forward years later, Sandy and I and some friends decided to do a bicycling trip at Banff.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in Banff there's an OK gift shop.
Mm-hmm.
And this was only a very few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we finally got a chance to see OK gift shop.
Mm-hmm.
Furs, jewelry.
The economy has been static here for quite some time now. But
we finally got the idea.
Yeah.
He was a very entrepreneurial, very, mm-hmm. very smart guy. And probably, aside from somebody like Morita-san, the most famous person of Japanese
mm-hmm.
Personality I ever met.
Wow.
A truly the Johnny Carson of Japan.
Yeah.
Only maybe more diverse.
Yeah. Combining the Bob Hope who went and bought up all the land and.
Exactly. Very smart.
Did a lot of stuff. Yeah. Wow.
So it was an interesting time to be a very young person and exposed to all these mm-hmm. these people and mm-hmm. opportunities. This guy took me out to dinner one night, and he had this brand new little car called an Isuzu.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was the very first car I ever saw that had an all-electronic mm-hmm. dash display, mm-hmm. as you may recall. And they started mm-hmm. importing them to the U.S. after that.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things in Jerry's notes is, well, the governor's off somewhere. We just got a notice from a Hiroshima car manufacturer, blah, 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 Mazda. And they're looking around, and so she said, well, you know, I think the only place to look would be probably the Port of Portland, and so put them together, but it's like...
Why not?
Yeah. So there you go, Mazda, what the heck?
And now we know them well, yeah. I think I told you when we were in Seoul, I saw my first Hyundai.
Yeah.
Looked exactly like a Honda.
Yeah.
So what's that Honda doing in the lobby of the Hyundai Corporation?
Right.
It was an interesting transitional time.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about all that stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
Transitioning again, you just don't know quite how.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And much like then, there's just uncertainty. That drives politics, drives economic choices, all that.
Yes, yeah, it's interesting to watch Abe and just see what is. He seems to be making what would seem to be wise economic moves after so many years of stagnation, but they mm-hmm. have had such a major cultural change in Japan, it's hard to know where they really are now.
Yeah, yeah, and he keeps pushing the military side.
Yeah.
And that he's getting pushback actually from the younger generation.
Yeah.
They're saying, you know, none of that. So it's a fascinating thing.
And what I never saw, you know, you don't have a real deep insight into it in the kind of experience I had there, but you know, the people we were dealing with were that generation that were post-war, who had had the, at least the ability to build the war machine, which was impressive.
Yeah.
They were a little overreached.
Yeah.
But the point is they were able to convert that into peacetime industrial. What I never really saw was a younger generation coming along that had the entrepreneurial.
There hasn't been a Morita for the...
Yeah, Morita was such an exception to all that.
Yeah.
And as a nation, it seems they floundered in that way. You really wonder where it goes from here.
Yeah. Whereas in China, you see people popping up.
Yeah.
And doing that. And in Russia, I mean, they're stealing stuff there, but you have an entrepreneurial thing going on.
Well, and the Chinese aren't above stealing a little either.
Oh,
they're
God, very
good at it.
I'm just teaching an international political economy class, and we're doing, this week is the basics, what is capitalism really?
Right.
But I'm pointing out that the Constitution has patents in it.
Yes.
To deal with how do we encourage and protect.
Yeah.
And how does that fit in with capitalism and things like that. But also pointing out that until kind of the early 1900s, the United States just stole stuff.
Yeah.
And then patented it here.
Yeah.
And that's what we say to China, don't do that. Right. And China says, but that's how you got where you were.
Or more importantly, we can buy it.
Exactly.
And they are. I mean,
exactly.
This is sort of the page finally turning, but I look at the, you know, Oregon, when we were doing this, one of the subtle or not so subtle criticisms of the high-tech investment was we were recruiting bricks and mortar, because that's what existed here. It was all bricks and mortar, and it was more the same.
Yeah.
Well, why aren't you Seattle, where they have software? Oh, I don't know, because that happened in Seattle. It's not here.
Right.
Now, in Oregon, suddenly, all we have is software, which people don't recall just how mobile software really is. It can leave on an airplane.
You betcha.
There's no investment. You lease space.
Yeah.
And you can do it from anywhere.
Yeah.
So we built all this massive capital investment, which is very good for everyone, but it's hard to sustain over the long run. If you look at the companies in Portland area alone that were sold this past year.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're virtually a shadow of what they once were.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. One of the things when I was talking to, interviewed Phil Kiesling, now a couple of years ago, but his dad was a tech dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and both of his parents worked at tech. And Phil just remembers growing up and his saying, Dad, what's this thing, like this company called Hewlett-Packard? Oh, yeah, you know, do the little things, you know, things like that. And what's happened is, you know, tech is, it's still here, but it's here.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And
unheard of. Really.
Yeah, unheard of. And Vic was really clear that tech was what allowed him to begin to make the high-tech arguments.
Yeah.
It's, well, not bringing an HP plant and building in Corvallis or anything like that. It was tech that was the center.
Tech and then the spinoffs. I
mean, yeah.
With Electroscientific and FAI and,
right,
and those that wouldn't have been here if it hadn't been that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is where Norm and his team came in. Yeah, it was truly, you look at the tree, it was the foundation of the whole thing. When I was leaving with, finished my master's at Oregon State, and we were leaving to move to Wisconsin, was the very first I heard, I guess we would have been about 23 or 24, that they were, entertaining the notion of whether they would allow Hewlett-Packard to build a plant in Corvallis.
Right.
And it was sort of an interesting notion at the time. I thought, why wouldn't you? Why would you? And then not many years later, I'm in this position and thinking, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
To actually question whether they wanted an investment like that. And yet, in that short time.
Yeah. The conversation totally changed.
Those things have come and gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a crazy world where technology is involved.
Yeah, I'm talking to Ted Kulongoski, who was in the legislature, just into the new legislature. He was a staffer and then in the legislature as that was happening. And the big fight was between Eugene and Corvallis.
Oh, whether they could get it, Eugene.
And I'd already heard it was Corvallis and Boise. But he said, no, 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 no. The real fight was here and
Yeah,
and that makes perfect sense.
It does. We really didn't know. I mean, yeah. Other issues were top of my mind.
Yeah.
But it totally changed Corvallis.
Yeah.
At least for a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ted, I ran into him in Shodazona. We were chatting at Dolores' attorney.
Uh-huh.
Matias, memorial. That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he held a lot of different roles in all this process.
He sure did.
More than any other single person I could think of.
No, yeah, he holds the championship, and the dynamics between him and Atiyah is just fascinating, because they were not happy with each other after the 82 election.
Oh, really?
But by the end, Atiyah said, you know, Ted is the person that I would like to go camping with.
Yeah.
They had a...
I couldn't agree more.
They bonded in such an amazing way. And it was because when Ted was governor, at one point he picked up the phone and said, Governor Atiyah, I want to run this by you because it's complex. And that just began to break things down and off they go.
Well, he is that kind of person.
Yeah.
I was reminded of that when we just had our little chat standing there. That was funny. We're standing there, Sho and I and the governor, Kulongoski. And it turns out to be Judy Rooks.
Oh, yeah.
And her husband, Bill Blackoff. And it was like, what a strange throwback.
Yeah.
I mean, it was natural to occur at such a place. You just don't know what's going to occur.
Yeah.
But he lived through all of that in one role or another.
Yeah.
As I told you, when I moved up with Jerry to Blue Cross and Blue Shield, he became the insurance commissioner.
Yeah, that's right. So... There
he
is.
I actually thought he was a remarkably good one from our perspective at the time.
Well, he had because he had a long, long career. Like Kate Brown had a long, long career.
Yeah.
But he was able to see, so how are we going to deal with insurance and safe?
Yeah.
What solution are we actually going to finally be able to put in place?
Yeah.
And doing all those kinds of things. It just takes a long time for all that to steep, and then you have to be when the political moment happens.
It's funny, two of my old associates are running safe now.
Oh, yeah?
Carrie Barnett and Bill Barr. Carrie was chief legal. When I was still at the Regents, and we hired Bill to run ops. Did I tell you how I first met Kate Brown?
Mm-mm. I mean, you told me you skied with her.
Yeah, Bill Wyatt.
Okay.
And Bill, at that point, was president of the Oregon Businesses Council, which I worked with after I left EDD.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill and I had a pattern each for 5 years consecutively in the early 90s. Our goal was to ski around Crater Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And two of those trips, Kate was on the trip.
That's so great.
Got a little acquainted that way.
Yeah.
Long time ago now.
Yeah. Yeah, very long time ago.
And a knee surgery.
Yeah, well, that happens too.
So.
Fantastic. So what I want to do is...
You are welcome to take any and all of this.
Okay. Story. I'm going to video... things, so then I can put together recollections with what you said, and then let's back it up.
Yeah, just make yourself comfortable and do whatever you need to do.
Let's see here. Camera, video. Cards in different languages. So. really be able to talk to the president. Business cards. Lots of them. This is probably at the Expo 86. And then a bunch of things from the pictures down here are actually in Fujian province. Bringing with love. It definitely is a Nakamura in Azumanu, and say the producer is Nakamura. The report for Expo 86. Expo 86 t-shirt. You want it? It's great. Tourism. Fantastic. And then all of these guys.
And that document was covered with this.
Okay, so it says February 83.
Yeah, that's interesting. The Governor's Economic Recovery Council Tourism Task Force.
Yeah, so it says we're mourning somehow.
Exactly.
Cool. So newspaper clippings, this is from the Tom's Mother collection. Apparently very comprehensive. Another one's
Natural Archives.
Says the chief in here, that's Tom's dad. Neat picture. All these great things. The clippings. Let me go in here and get these. This is from GCPBA, so predates working for the state, but it's pushing Portland, and it's then Oregon as a travel destination. So all these magazines there, down there, all of them have stuff on Oregon in them. All kind of early 80s. Birth of the process. Fantastic.